Market Music with Fairbairn and Russell.
Hello and welcome to the Market Musings podcast with Fairbairn and Russell. And today on the podcast, we are very pleased to welcome our second private investor on the show, who's very kindly decided to come on and have a chat to us. His name is Richard Allen. Welcome, Richard.
Thank you for having me.
No problem. Morning, Kenny.
Yep. Thanks, Mark and Richard.
All good, thank you.
Yeah, I'm all right. Thank you, Kenny. Yeah, good. So, Richard, where are you calling from?
I'm in Southampton at the moment, in my in the basement of a property we own in a workspace.
Okay, are you in the basement because you're shielding from the virus, or is that just the best place to be doing this call?
We've just reopened it, and it's the best place to be doing the call. To be honest, it's nice and quiet down here, I hope.
Yeah, it is. It is quiet. Yeah, that's good. That's good. So we've met Richard a couple of times at some London investor events. And we're just, you know, pleased you've come on to have a chat to us about your investing history, really. But I understand you're into property development and construction. It'd be quite interesting to learn just a little bit about your history, you know, go back as far as you want, what your early career and how it progressed, if that's okay.
Yeah, of course. So I'm a Portsmouth graduate, graduated in 1994. So I'm pretty old now, nearly 48 years old. I did a civil engineering degree and then worked my way through the construction, basically building stuff for big companies down in London in the southeast, living in Southampton. Worked my way up the ladder. Right through until 2007, around that period of time, I was working in London, managing some big highways maintenance contracts. So Camden, Barnet, big contracts where they have the maintenance contracts for redoing all the roads and footways, and you just go on a cycle, maintenance cycle, and you charge a council a fee for doing that. Managed all that. To be honest, I was getting the train to London at 5:30 in the morning. I was getting home at 7:00 at night, and I was sick to death of it after 4 years of traveling to London. And thought, well, there has to be a better way. At the time, my wife was quite heavily pregnant. She hadn't had a great pregnancy, and I kept getting teary phone calls. Can you come home? I can't cope. Can't. You know, typical problems when you're having children. And I just thought, nah. But this isn't for me anymore. So I handed a notice in Christmas 2007 with kind of a backup plan to just tout myself out as a estimator, quantity surveyor, site engineer, just on a freelance basis, basically. 2007. And then that quickly then became me meeting my current business partner just through that work, and we set up a civil engineering company, basically. Started it in middle of 2008,
okay,
which is possibly the worst time you could ever imagine to be starting a construction company. And we did all right, actually. We battled on for a few years. And then, unfortunately, as we came out of the recession, there was kind of a second wave in construction. And we lost the business in the end of 2011. And it was horrible time, to be honest. Anyone that's been through that, you know, there was a bunch of reasons why it happened. You learn through experience. And it wasn't a great time. So that was the end of 2011. We then set up another business in 2012, starting again, because we both just sat down one day and we said, right, do we want to get a job or do we want to have another go at this? We had hardly any money. And we thought, well, what do we do? So we thought, well, we can supply labor to the construction and industry because we knew a load of people. And we set about doing that. And we set up our business. And we with a load of learning behind us from the previous experience, and we've done all right. We're growing, and we're still going now.
Okay.
And it's a good business. We supply labour to the construction industry across, we're Hampshire based, but anywhere up to London, East and West Sussex, Dorset, Wiltshire, Oxfordshire, Berkshire, all around there to mainly quite big construction companies.
Right. Okay. It's great that you did it again, because a lot of people after being burnt would be too scared to pick that up again.
Yeah, it was that choice of getting a job or having another go at it. And yeah. I felt I was quite young still. We knew where it had gone wrong. We knew what to do differently, maybe second time. And thank goodness it's worked. So scared from that experience, we set up a second business in 2014 to a property company, basically, where we bought, because property prices were still really low. So we were buying property in Portsmouth. We were using our construction contracts context to renovate the properties. We were looking for stuff that was dilapidated or was a really big house that could be split into flats or whatever. Mm-hmm. And alongside the labour supply company, we developed quite a fair-sized portfolio of property in Portsmouth, which we still hold today. And that became part of the sort of longer-term plan, really, was to try and generate an income away from the risky construction sector. And then I guess around 2016, then probably around the time the Metal Tiger thing started, I just started to get an interest in the markets and in investing.
Okay.
And it started then, and I don't.
Right.
And I was trying to think before I came on here why it started.
Yeah.
And to be honest, I don't know. I think I've always had an interest in it. I've always read the back of the papers, the business pages, but I've never really put my finger onto why it started, but it's become an interest, and it's become more of an interest over the last few years. You know, learning the mechanics of how everything works, and I really enjoy it now. And just to add a little bit more color, is around 2 years ago I met a business coach,
right?
For our labour supply company initially, and he was like, "Right, what are you doing, and what is your end goal for your business? You know, do you want to keep it for 20 years, and do you want to sell it?
Mm-hmm.
How big do you want it to be? What's your personal goals?" And he asked all these questions, and we went through a really interesting process with professionalizing and growing up the labor supply company to you know, we focused on basically every operation within the business. And the same then with the property company. You know, what are we trying to do here? Are we just trying to generate an income? Are we going to do more houses? What's the plan? You know, you're 45, you're going to retire at some point. Business people don't, I haven't put a lot of money in a pension, so I need to generate my own pension. What's the goal? And investing started off as a bit of a hobby. And you know, we went through the early days, and I probably made a load of mistakes. We made some good money, lost some good money. And it's now I'm trying to look at it as a business, if you like.
Right, okay.
And apply the same principles to it that I apply to the, you know, my main bread and butter, with a view to, you know, retiring in 10, 15 years time, hopefully with a, you know, a decent income stream there. That's the plan.
Right. Okay.
And how has COVID affected the businesses, Richard?
Well, it's construction is obviously labor supply. The first thing you do is you get rid of your temporary staff. So it's got rid of, it's knocked it by about 50-60% at the moment. So I've had to let a couple of staff go. We did have an office in Portsmouth, which is luckily was coming to the end of its lease. So I've let that go. And we're now based in our place in Southampton, which is, you know, the last part of our property business, or the latest part is we've opened a you know, a hospitality led work environment, which is a big office in Southampton. So we're based out of there now. And to be honest, I think we'll be okay. We've had a good couple of years. It's shaking the market out, no doubt. There'll be a lot of people will disappear. And it's just a question about how and at what speed it recovers. There's signs it's starting to get busy again, but whether that lasts, I don't know.
Yeah, my brothers are in the construction industry, and I think they're going back next Monday. Obviously, in Scotland, we are slightly behind the curve in England, but I think they've no option. They really need to go back. If they want to get some money, they've got to go back. So, at least you've been able to survive a downturn and hopefully come out stronger on the other side. You always learn a lot about yourself in these kind of situations, so you do. And you look at your business from a different angle because you've got the time and you're sitting at home, you know, and you can start think about expanding it or streamlining some of it, or, you know, just different opportunities that will probably exist in the market now.
Absolutely. And I think that people will be scared of a second wave. They will be scared of overcommitting and taking too many direct staff on. And I think there'll be a big opportunity for temporary staff in the next few months. Because I think everyone's thinking deep down that, you know, next winter there might be a second strike.
Yeah.
Do you really want to be employing a lot of people this summer on the off chance? You know, there might be a recession anyway. Well, there's going to be a recession. That's plain. But yeah. There could be a really deep recession. There could be another wave of COVID. Let's manage our risk here. Let's use temporary staff for a bit because we can get rid of them at the drop of a hat. So the opportunity's there. We're talking to a few people. It would be fine, you know.
Do you tend to find that sort of after a recession that construction tends to pick up because government stimulus, or is that false sort of idea?
No, it's absolutely bang on. Yeah, they'll be chucking money at it. No doubt, exactly. Because if the government can borrow money at very low rates, it will spend that money on. I don't know on what though, actually, because if you look at COVID, it's going to change the whole way people work. Everyone's on Zoom, everyone's on Skype, you know, people aren't meeting face to face. So you would think that the longer term the traffic might drop, the railway demand might drop. So on what infrastructure do they spend? And it's probably going to be on greening up the economy, I should imagine. So I'd be looking for opportunities within that kind of sector, because they will spend money, there's no doubt about it. And it's looking for what they announce they're going to spend the money on, when they announce it, and when they do, how do we best take advantage of that?
It would be good if they do spend it on green. I was reading, I think it was BBC News a while ago, just sort of at the start of this sort of lockdown, that this is a chance for governments to re-stimulate their economies in a green way. And it'd be great to actually see that happen. whether they do or not remains to be seen, I suppose.
I don't think there's any choice. I think the way the world's going, which should, you know, again, change. It produces opportunity, doesn't it? And that's what.
So. Absolutely, yeah.
So moving on to your investing side of things, Richard. What sectors are you currently in? Are you focused mainly in mining, or do you cover any other sectors?
Yeah. So I've basically went a little bit gung ho, I suppose, early doors, chucked all the money into. Pretty much AIM blue sky stocks. As I say, I had a lot of early success, which probably wasn't good for me. And then, you know, you think you're bulletproof, but you don't really know what you're doing. And then that was through sort of 16 and 17 when it were pretty good years, really. The start of 2018 was great. And then the second half of 2018 was terrible for me. And then last year wasn't great. So, luckily, I've met this business coach, and I've never even spoken to him about investing, but I'm just applying the same principles, you know. So I now split. I've actually got a plan to make a return, and I'm looking at. I've given myself a pretty low target, a 10% a year overall return, and I'm mixing it across a blend of different. Portfolios, if you like. So I'm slowly building an income portfolio, which is, you know, the Shells and the Glaxos and all that stuff, some really good blue chip companies, because I see those as paying dividends for years and years and years. And, you know, that's where, and they're less risky. And then I've got a medium kind of risk pot of which I'm just building up now, of resource companies, which are cash flow positive. They're producing for a long period of time. You know, they're dividend payers and all the rest of it, but they've got a bit of growth in them in the okay. share price, I think. And then I've got the bucket of pre-resource, you know, pre-revenue stuff, which is where my interest is, to be honest. And, you know, along with yourself, Mark, and I'm sure yourself, Kenny, as well, you know, it's where you can make decent returns. And I've seen it in several stocks. I haven't probably ridden the wave of any of those yet, or I have. If I've ridden the wave up, I've ridden the wave back down again. But I've now got a plan. I've got a basket of them. I've got a plan of when to get in, when to get out, and okay. basically when to de-risk, really. And I'm trying to get a mix of commodities in a mix of jurisdictions.
So yeah, I must admit, I've kind of diversified a bit this year as well, picking up some Bitcoin and some XRP. And then recently, I took the plunge into Forex as well. So I'm trying to sort of split the investments up. The Forex is pretty straightforward. It's pretty passive. It just runs in the background, and returns have been pretty decent so far. So yeah, I think we're having the Forex guys back on in a couple of weeks, and we can run through what I've done in my first month. But brilliant. You know, it's certainly something I would never have considered maybe 2 years ago, because you would say, "Oh, it's boring." But then when you start looking at the returns that these guys are generating for us, you're like, I don't really give a shit if it's boring and it's passive. Yeah. It just makes money at the end of the day.
Exactly.
You know? Yeah, and that's most, well, all of us are in it to make money.
Exactly.
Yeah, so that's, you just try and take that. I think because I'm getting older, I'm taking a bit of the emotion out of it and just seeing it as money.
Exactly, and that's exactly what I've learned in the last couple of years with my business, and you know, and what the plan is to going forward is money in the day. And but if it's a hobby as well, and it's interesting and it interests you personally, then super, you know,
yeah,
kind of doing all around.
Yeah. So what's been your biggest winner? The name then,
The biggest two, which I both got into at exactly the same time, have been Asia Met Resources and Metal Tiger. I started going to investor events in 2016, and I don't even know why I went to the first one, or I can't really remember. I think it must have just been something I saw on Twitter or something. And I met, I think the first time I really got into it, I just went to the first Momentous event, and I think it was 2016, and Paul Johnson was stood in the corner, and he'd just taken over Metal Tiger. And I think it was about a week after they'd signed over they'd signed up the Botswana investment with Mod Resources. And he was just saying, look, I've just signed this blinder of a deal. He's going, everyone's ignoring me. Nobody's, you know, I think Metal Tiger's market cap at the time was possibly 1 million, maybe less. They just paid, I think it was peanuts to buy into Mod Resources and all the land they had there in Botswana. And then later that year, I bought a bit of stock just off the back of a chat I had with Paul that night. And then it just went mad. I'm sure Mark remembers it. You know, I think they just put one drill hole in the middle, hit a load of copper. And then it pushed its way up from 1p to 6p pretty much in a very short period of time. And I thought, well, this is easy. and then around the same sort of time, I went to see Asia Met presented. Tony Manini came over. And no one was interested. I can't remember. It might have been in Optiva's offices in Mayfair. I can't remember. Anyway, we had a couple of beers, and Tony was telling me his story about how he'd done it before, and these properties in Indonesia that had a load of copper, gold, couple of really good projects, and then the similar thing happened. It went from a penny up to about, I don't know, 2p, then 4p, and I thought, oh, this is okay, I kind of rode the wave up, and then I kind of rode the wave back down again. And then I thought, well, I need to really kind of learn a little bit more about this. And, I think I have, or I hope I have.
Well, yeah, you hope you have learned. Yeah, everyone, I think, goes through that.
Yeah, and I'm still involved in those companies now. I mean, Asia Met's in a great place. It's just at the moment got a turn of energy looking at its KSK contract. It's got Bhutan sitting on a back burner, which is a potentially massive, really, really big resource, copper gold porphyry there. And it's, all right, sitting at 39 million market cap now. It was about 2 million when I first got into it.
Yeah. But,
So those ones, and Metal Tiger, I'm still in Metal Tiger. I've been really interested in that. I follow the progress all the way through. I make the effort to go to general meetings. I've met, and I've got a lot of time for Michael McNeely, Charles Hall and Mark Potter. They go out of the way to speak to private investors, and they just come across as honest guys. And, they've got a lot of experience of, Mark has particularly and Charles. I'm trying to back people, I guess, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, that's important, isn't it, to back the directors, really. That's key. But I definitely remember the Metal Tiger days. I mean, I think I got into investing in about 2013. And I think, I probably bought into Metal Tiger around 2016 as well, like you. Yeah. And I remember going to bed excited, and waking up really early the next day because of there was a trading halt, and I'd stay up to like 11 or whatever, or 12, whatever it was, to get the Australia, the Australian news release from Mod. I've not experienced a similar thing with any company since then, really. I mean, that just seemed to pick up a really great story with a group of people. And maybe it was because, the Twitter groups were just taking off as well. And maybe it's moved away from there. I don't know. But there was definitely a group of, a big group of like-minded people with different skills who we just all chatted away, didn't we? And it was just like, it was great. It was such a fun story to be a part of. I hope we can find another one like that and maybe relive some of those days because it was certainly fun. But Metal Tiger, that's been quite stagnant, hasn't it, for a while? But just this week, it's actually looking pretty hot again, isn't it?
Yeah, it's picking up, luckily. We're back to about 2.5 pence now. But it's really grown as a business. It's still got its interest in Botswana. It's potentially got a huge net smelter royalty, a hugely valuable net smelter royalty there. If Samphire, that now own it, managed to get a working mine there, which I'm sure they will, and it's got a load of other really interesting projects, spread over. It's got Kalahari Metals, which of course is just next door to the Samphire land. It's got interests in Cobra. It's got interests in Thailand still. It's got Australia. There's a big mix of projects there now.
And what do you have an exit price? Or, I mean, I know you said that you have your kind of strategy of when to get in or when to get out of a company. What are you looking for, a certain percentage return, or you sort of follow? Is it more based on the story and when you think it's perhaps run out of heat?
Exactly that. I think it's based on the story.
Right. Yeah.
If you go back, of course, the problem we had in those days, which is, I guess, is when we're still learning, is that Mod kept having to go back to the market because every time it drilled three or four holes, you'd get great results. And then everybody knew, of course, that they'd have to go back to the market to place to be able to afford to deal the next few, which is, of course, you end up with a lot of dilution there. Metal Tiger, they're not in that position anymore because they've got the Samphire shares.
Yeah.
They shouldn't have to raise again, really. There should be a lot of warrant money coming into the company as well. I think there's a load of 2P warrants outstanding for the next year. So that should bring a couple of million in at least, which, in today's markets, they should be able to do quite a lot with that money. So I'm just going to follow the story, and I will de-risk and then get out when I think the story's run its course.
Right. Okay. Yeah. And I believe you've got a bit of an interesting experience you got some stock at a very low price. Do you want to tell us a little bit about that?
It was about 4 years ago when we.
Yeah.
And it was just one of those days when the market is just shot to bits and everything's down 3 or 4% for no particular reason. And for whatever reason, Metal Tiger just dropped about 30% one morning, or the bid dropped. And I thought, I'll just chuck an order in. And I bought for, I don't think, I can't exactly remember, but it was about 50% discount to the to the price it was 10 minutes before and 10 minutes later. And then it was with my Barclays stockbroker's account. And I thought, that's handy. Made like, you know, 50% in about 10 minutes. And then Barclays rang up and they went, we're not honouring it. There was a glitch in our system, whatever, we're not honouring it. Here's your money back.
Wow.
and I've never heard of it before or since, but they sent me a hamper to say sorry that their system broke. But that is what I did get out of it.
Did you get the email contract through?
I did, yeah.
I would have thought that one. If they've gave you a contract, then it's done and dusted.
I did. I tried it for a bit, which is how I ended up with a hamper. They ended up hiding behind some kind of legal. So I had a choice over about 500 quid to get into a legal, you know, a battle or not really. And you're probably right, Kenny. There was a contract there. That there's also some clause they've got in their thing that says that if they make a mistake, it's not their fault. written in legalese. So I don't know.
Yeah, I remember you went back and forth quite a few times with Barclays, I don't think it was their system, was it? It was just the fact that a market maker had dropped it, and probably to try and spook some stop losses or something, I don't know. And you just happened to be watching at the right time and clicked that buy button. So, I mean, really, I think your trade was legal, you know, and it's the market maker that should suffer. But unfortunately, perhaps it doesn't work like that in the real world.
Well, no. And how far do you push it? You know what I mean?
Yeah. How much is it worth it? Yeah.
They said no. The only way they were going to say yes was if I wrote them a legal letter, and then you've got to pay a solicitor and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Such is life. So have you got any stocks in your radar, Richard, that you're tracking or keeping an eye on with a view to potentially investing in?
The one I really like the look of at this yesterday is Trident, I think. Metal Tiger's taken some of it, and they're going to be a royalty company. And the only other royalty company there is at the moment, as far as I'm aware, is Anglo Pacific, which I've got a little bit of. And Mark Potter of Metal Tiger and used to be chief investment officer of Anglo Pacific is on the board of Trident Resources. I like the look of what they're trying to do there. And I think it could be one, you know, particularly as we come out of the downturn it could be quite a growth story there. And then the company will mature into a dividend payer in a few years' time. So I'm looking at that one quite closely, actually. I saw an RNS this morning, but I haven't had a chance to read it yet. I think their first royalty has completed, so that they, you know, that transaction's completed. So that's certainly on my watch at the moment, and I think I'm probably going to buy some of that. It came on at 20p yesterday, and it shot up to 26, and it's now dropping to 23. So I'm certainly looking.
Yeah, I wonder if with the Mark Potter connection with Thor.
Exactly.
Mining as well. I wonder if they're involved with the Spring Hill royalty deal as well.
Exactly.
Kind of makes sense. So it does.
Well, exactly. There's a bit of an incestuous kind of story there, isn't there?
With
Metal Tiger invested in Thor. Mark's on the board of Thor. He's on the board of Metal Tiger. He's on the board of Trident, which happens to be a royalty company. Metal Tiger needs a return on its investment. Thor needs its share price up.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. I don't know what the... You know what's going to transpire, but I just think something will transpire out of that little triangle of companies.
I think we'll find out in the next month or so. I think Mick said a few times that they're working towards the end game and the royalty deal. Obviously, COVID's held it back a bit, but I think now pretty much Australia's game on again. So
yes.
I don't think there's the wet season's finished. So I don't think there's any excuses not to get out and about now if there's any field site visits required to finalise the deal. But Yeah, watch your space on that one, I suppose.
So we'll have a little bit in there. But yeah, in terms of current stuff, I've got Katoro mining. I'm interested in that. Looks a bit of a no-brainer, which probably means it'll go wrong. with Blyvor, if they get funding on that, it looks, you know, Cat is a £5 million market cap company, and it's looking at making double that per year if they get this thing working. So yeah, there's plenty of upside there.
Yeah, 14 interested parties. If they can't find one decent deal out of 14 people, then or 14 parties, then there's something far wrong. But yeah, I think it'll happen. I think they're just, if I was getting the board of Katoro, I'd be playing off the best two or three against each other just to try and get the best deal all around. And there's no point in taking the first one that's given to you. So
exactly.
Yeah, it'd be real interesting as well to find out, you know, what kind of companies it is. You know, is it local companies? Is it international majors? I mean, obviously Louis can't tell you this, but it would be, I'm sure it'll come out in the wash once they make the announcement.
See plenty of upside there. I think Thor Mining, I think you've discussed on a few podcasts before. I've been in that one a long time. That's one of the ones I've ridden up and then back down again.
Yeah, but me too.
But at £4 million market cap, I can't see a lot of downside, I'll be honest. I can see multiples of upside, and you know, they need to get their funding sorted out, which hopefully this royalty deal will do. And we'll see what happens. And then my other one, Panther Metals.
Okay, yeah.
I met Darren back in the Metal Tiger days.
Yeah.
When he was a mere private investor, and I just really like the guy. He wears his heart on his sleeve. He's doing it for all the right reasons. He's put a cracking little team together there with Karen from Ariana Resources, Karen Senna, and I don't know. I think if anyone's going to make a success of anything, I'll back Darren. He's the absolute opposite of a lifestyle company. I've just met him a few times, and you just get a feel for people, and I just know he'll make a success of it.
Yeah,
or if he doesn't make a success of it, his fault.
Yeah.
There's definitely some interesting stuff out there for Panther. I've got a thread running on Twitter just now with some of the historical stuff on the Big Bear project. And some of the grades are just, some of the bulk samples from the 30s and 40s, it was like 775 grams per tonne. You know, it's just off the scale. So, I'm looking through all the reports at the moment and just looking for the decent stuff. But, you know, I like the Panther story as well. And it's the amount of shares in the issue as well. It's like 49 million shares. Mm-hmm. The board's got a lot of skin in the game.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just quietly doing 5, 6, 7% a day. Almost unnoticed.
Exactly. And if you're looking at making, you know, whatever your percentage target per year is, you know, if you're making 5% a day for a few days, you're all right, aren't you, really? But there you go. It's 7.5 pence now. I'm just looking for it. It's up, you know. It's still only a £4 million company even now.
Yeah, I think that's key, isn't it, as well? That's what I've learned, is to look at the market cap, not the share price. You know, you look at the market cap and where it could potentially go. And then you can translate that yourself into the actual share price if you want, but just thinking on the share price is a bad idea. That's one of the things I learned in my early days of investing.
Yeah, and then the other one I've got at the moment, which I've been in since the start, is United Oil and Gas. That's another board I've been in, Met, and I really like the team. I like their drive and their ambition. They're ex-Tullow team, and they want to repeat. They want to repeat the Tullow story, really. They've now building a full cycle oil and gas company. They've got producers in there now, so they're covering their costs. And making money even in this low oil environment, and they've got some decent North Sea licenses and some blue sky upside in some potentially quite big areas. So, and that's only a little £12 million company, and that potentially, again, you don't know, do you? But potentially, there's a lot of upside there, and not a lot of downside risk, I don't think, in these times.
Yeah, it sounds like it's very important to you as well to actually go and meet the project, well, meet the project team or the directors and understand, you know, understand the project as well. That's clearly an important point for you to do before you invest. Is that right?
Yeah, I've seen so many just through watching for the last few years. You see so many companies that have got nothing really behind them that get pumped to high heaven and then, you know, they just disappear, or everyone moves on and forgets about them. And I want to back ambitious people that have a plan, you know, and that are in it for, they're not in it to draw a salary. They're in it to make themselves a lot of money by making their share price appreciate.
Yeah, exactly. And where, Richard, where, when you're looking for these sort of perhaps more blue sky companies, how do you sort of, what do? You just sort of follow the network and the chat, or is there any you know, how do you sort of get an idea of what's about?
I've been to, just through meeting people in London, I've met guys. So I've got accounts with a couple of that are brokers up in London now with Optiva and with SI Capital in Surrey. Down there, and so I speak to them quite regularly to find out who they're, you know, what they're doing, what placings are coming up, you know, and that sort of thing. So I get involved in some companies through those, and to be honest, it's working quite well. It's reading the reports, it's meeting the board, it's going to the investor. And I just find that just doing a bit of groundwork, I've got the confidence. If the share price drops 30%, like it has done, well, United Oil and Gas, I think it went from 4p to a penny recently. But, you know, because I'm comfortable with the story and I'm comfortable that the oil price is going to go above $20 a barrel, $30 a barrel, and that they're profitable at $20 a barrel, you know what I mean? It just means you can sleep at night without.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, if I can average down, I will do. But, you know, long term, you should be okay.
We actually had the Geo. What was his? I can't remember his full title, Kenny. We had him. We were talking to him yesterday from SI.
Charlie Stevenson.
Charlie Stevenson, yeah, from SI, and it was quite a long podcast. We'll put that out this week as well. We talked about a lot of companies, but I think the plan is to try and get him on maybe once a month, and perhaps focus on perhaps one or two of the companies in SI's portfolio, and he can just elaborate on from a geological point of view. Really interesting, knows what he's talking about, you know, and helps to put stuff into context, and you know why he actually said that the reason SI have got him involved is because they don't want to be pushing rubbish to their clients. And his job is to make sure that the stuff is solid project. But if he can put it into, you know, let's say layman's terms for a private investor, I think it's invaluable information, really. So
exactly. And you're right that the brokers need quality companies and quality to survive.
Yeah, they do.
You can push rubbish out placing, but push rubbish placings out, you know, if you want, but if everybody that invests in those placings loses money, then they're not going to get back to you, are they?
No, you're not going to last long. Yeah, no.
Exactly. And if you can take a placing, you can double your money. You can then de-risk half. You've then got another lump of money to put into the next placing. And that's the way it works. And, you know, if you put 10 grand into a company and then you get 2.5 grand back in 3 months' time, you're not going to be going back. You're going to be investing in, you want to be investing in stuff where you can make money, simple as that, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, good. Well, it's been really good to talk to you, Richard. I did want to just touch back to property briefly, unless Kenny, do you want to have you got any more on sort of markets for Richard or
no, I'll let you fire away your question, Mark.
Yeah, it was just one thing I thought of earlier, just as you're into in property, I just wondered what your opinion is on the market sort of now, how COVID's affected it. You know, is it a good time to buy, to sell, to rent? What's your sort of opinion on perhaps how it might be going in the near term?
Domestically, we're not really doing any more because they changed. We've got probably, I think we got about 5 properties in Portsmouth. We're not really doing any more because the tax regime isn't great anymore. You don't get, you know, tax relief on your mortgage interest payments and a few other things. And the government's gone a bit anti-landlord. So we're not really, you know, it makes us an income every month and it's great and we'll never get rid of it. But I don't think we're going to grow it. I think we've diversified into other areas, which is why we've bought this place in Southampton, which is a big 250-year-old bonded warehouse for a hospital, you know, and we put it as a work club, a hospitality-led work environment, basically. And hopefully we've kind of luckily through COVID hit exactly the right space at the right time. There's a lot of people looking to move into flexible workspace. And, you know, we're signing up quite a few people at the moment who have had Regus type offices that it's just not working for them. And they want to work in somewhere where they can work flexibly. It's pay as you go and everything else. So that's our newest kind of investment. And that we got that going in November. Took a long time because it was an old building. We had to go through planning. We had to go through heritage and all the rest of it. But we're open. And that's hopefully it's going to be the future for us. We need to get this place a bit more full. We need to refinance it. And then we need to be looking at another one somewhere else. Possibly, you know, up towards London Way, maybe. But so that side of the property, hopefully we're in the right space. General commercial, I'm not sure going forward, if I'm honest. You can see people wanting to reduce their office space. You can see people, obviously retail's going to be very tough for years if it ever properly recovers, you know. So that's where we are with our property.
Okay. And what about residential? Do you have any idea where that might be heading?
Not really. I think it might drop a bit. I guess with residential, you need 2 things. You need a lot of people looking to move and have to have the confidence to move. And then secondly, you need mortgage companies willing prepared to lend on those people. So if those 2 things are in place, then it should be okay.
I mean, the interest rates is obviously a positive for buyers, isn't it, at the moment? It's a good time to be locking in a good interest rate for a few years, I'd have said.
We've been redoing our portfolio recently, remortgaging, and we're getting, I think, 3% or something now. That's on buy-to-let mortgages. So there's cheap money around. That's good. There's a lot of cheap money.
Yeah, cheap money around. Yeah, and I was reading an article yesterday on the rental market that there's actually reports that there's not enough rental property to meet demand. There seems to be a bit of a rush after this sort of lockdown's eased and things like people falling out with their partners, maybe. That was mentioned in the article, wanting to move into their own space. The sort of signs I'm seeing is, it's actually still quite buoyant. So, it remains to be seen, doesn't it? But
exactly. It's just a question of what's coming down the pipe for everybody, really, in terms of how nobody knows what this fallout is going to be from this 12 weeks of whatever it is of lockdown and what's going to happen. You know, how much is it going to... Because the bad news isn't out yet, you know.
Yeah, of course.
When furlough stops...
That's the point, isn't it?
We will really see. Because at the moment, there's no point in getting rid of anyone who's given their furlough money. They'll carry on 80% until furlough stops and then everybody will get rid of them. So, you know, and I think there's 8 million people on furlough. So let's say half of those don't go back to their job. We're in a world of trouble. And I think you can see it in America, obviously, the last couple of days with all the rioting that's going on over there. I know what the initial incident was, but I think it's been, you know, there's 40 million people have lost their jobs over there in the last...
Right.
Weeks.
Wow.
And that might be why they're on their streets. In part. Don't know, where's that going to go? You just don't know. You don't.
No, you don't. You don't.
Yeah, no. Let's hope it goes okay.
Yeah, indeed. Well, great. Thank you, Richard, for coming on and talking to us. It's very interesting to hear your investing story. Kenny, did you have any more questions?
No, I think we've covered a wide spectrum of topics. And you'll be most welcome to come on again, Richard.
That'd be interesting in a few months, maybe, or yeah, end of the year. See where we are. See if my newfound strategy is actually working.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we're looking at every month. We're looking in depth at Kenny's Forex portfolio with the guys. So we'll see how that does as well. It's always nice to get an insight into a real performance of something, you know.
I'm going to make a point of listening to those podcasts actually later today and see what you're doing. It's piqued my interest, so we'll see.
Cool. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Great. Well, thank you, Richard.
Nice. Yeah, thanks, Richard.
Thank you. Cheers.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Bye. Thank you for listening to another podcast from Market Musings with Fairbairn and Russell. Tune in next time.